Hey, everybody. I've got a special guest with me today on this episode of the Carrot Cast. I will introduce to you in a second, but I've known Joe McCall for years. And funny thing is, I didn't even realize it until after we recorded this. I'm going to see him four times in person in the next about 60 days and at four different masterminds. So kind of cool. And we have a chance to talk about a lot of cool stuff on here. So the main things that you're going to be grabbing away from this podcast, there's some really cool things we didn't even intend on diving into on the impact of masterminds and what we've done with them and how you can even start your own the way that we have. We dive into that. We dive into wholesaling lease options, why in this market environment you need to be doing creative real estate, because if you're not doing creative real estate in this market environment where we're at or near the top of the market, you can't keep on doing things the way you've been doing in the last one or two or three years. We've seen Carrot customers go out of business because they haven't shifted and adopted their strategy. So are you molding your business around your solution and not changing your solution? Or are you molding your business around solving the problem your clients find? One of the ways that you can do that is with wholesaling and lease options, and we dive into that in pretty good detail. Next, Joe dives into his process on finding the best cash buyers out there and some really, really good stuff. So before I introduce you to Joe, I want to just let you know Carrot Camp Fall 2018 is sold out. Carrot Camp Fall 2018 is sold out. We have an amazing, amazing group of investors and agents coming out this time as well. This is Carrot Camp number 3. Carrot Camp number 4 is going to be spring 2019. Make sure you go to carrotcamp.com and go grab a spot on the waiting list. Go to carrotcamp.com, grab a spot on the waiting list for the spring event. It's probably going to be in May 2019 sometime. We'll email it out here in the next 60 days or so, these specific dates, and we'll open it up. A little warning, we only take a max of 15 people per event. This one sold out pretty darn fast with some really high level people. And next time we already have four of those spots full. Four of the 15 are already pre-sold for the spring, and some of our Carrot Camp alumni who we give a chance to grab the tickets first, they get first shot at the Carrot Camp spring event. So when it opens up, there's probably going to be less than 7 or 8 tickets total. So make sure you go to carrotcamp.com, get on the waiting list, and look for that email in the next 60 days. We're excited to see you out here in Oregon at Carrot Camp spring 2019. And we want to change your life. We want to not just change your business, not just change your lead flow, but we want to change your life. Tim Mittenbach, one of our clients who came out to Carrot Camp, he was already a high-level investor coming in. He said he completely had his perspective changed on a lot of things. He went back and actually got an office downtown inspired by our office and our culture, and he really revamped his culture and his business inspired by what he saw behind the scenes here at Carrot. Number two, he went out and changed part of his business model based off of feedback directly from other Carrot campers who were doing a bunch of deals, and he brought in an extra $60,000 in revenue in 60 days after Carrot Camp. And also the biggest thing is, he said he came into Carrot Camp really not as charged up about his business as he was before. He left Carrot Camp fully charged up about his business, about the future, and about the impact he can make. So we want to see you guys do the same thing. Go to carrotcamp.com. Last little public service announcement before I introduce Joe is we have came out with a brand new design here at Carrot called the Hemlock. Now, we name all of our designs after trees. We have a lot of trees here in Oregon. The Hemlock design is coming out. Probably by the time you listen to this, it's probably already going to be out. Okay, go to oncarrot.com/blog, check out the release blog post for the Hemlock design. This design is a more modern take on our already high converting framework. We took our high converting framework, we used the data that we've learned in lots of our 1,000+ other split tests, and we said, how can we take this and make this look even more modern to help our clients stand out? And add in a couple things that are going to boost performance even more. So go check out that new Hemlock design. Just log into your Carrot account. If you're an advanced marketer, you'll have access to this. If you are not in the advanced marketer plan, you're in Core or Content Pro, and you want access to the Hemlock design, just go into your account, click the membership tab, and upgrade to advanced marketer, and you're going to get access immediately to launch the Hemlock design. Move it over. You can test it. You can see what your site's going to look like before you move it over and give it a go. It looks amazing on mobile, and we even made it on mobile to where it makes the phone number stand out even better. We're undergoing a lot more testing on Hemlock right now, but we're really pumped to be able to deliver this for you. Keep an eye out, advanced marketers. You guys get first access and sometimes exclusive access to new designs as you go. Go upgrade if you're not in there. And if you're already an advanced marketer, go check it out. All right. Without further ado, let me welcome in Joe McCall.
Hey guys and gals, Trevor here with Carrot, and coming at you with another episode of the Carrot Cast. And I've got a longtime friend with me. I'm going to be introducing you to who I can't even talk right now to you here for in a second. And I'm actually going to be seeing Joe a lot this next couple months, which I'm excited about. But I want to welcome Joe McCall onto the Carrot Cast.
Trevor, how are you, man?
Doing great, buddy. It's kind of funny as I was thinking about this podcast, I was going, why did it take so long to get Joe on the Carrot Cast?
And that's a great question.
it is.
And you know what else? I'm not kidding. 5 minutes ago, I ate some carrots.
You ate some carrots. So see, it's all the subliminal messaging in there. I'm telling you.
My wife's been, she's real good at giving us healthy foods and snacks. And so she cuts up these vegetables and puts them on the counter, and you can't help but just take some and eat them, you know? Yeah.
So I want you to tell the truth. Did you think about Carrot, our company, when you saw and ate those carrots, or did you not? That's fine if you didn't.
No, I did not.
Oh, bummer. We have worked.
It's funny still. Because our podcast was in 5 minutes, and they were there, and I ate them.
Yeah.
But I love you, Trevor, and I love Investor Carrot. I've been one of your earliest customers. Mm-hmm. I still am a customer. I give you guys a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But it's not money wasted. It's very good money. I recommend Investor Carrot to tons and tons of people. And it's just a great service. It's a great platform. People that think that they can go do it on their own and make it better, it's just I shake my head and think, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, this is already done. Now, you didn't even ask me to pitch this, but I will, because it's important. A lot of people are out there thinking, oh, I can just hire someone on Upwork to build a website for me. And mm-hmm. But like, okay, and I can just host it myself. And still, if you were to host it yourself and go through all that work, you might save 10, 20 bucks a month, mm-hmm. maybe. And then if you were to go all of that time that you put into it, how much is your time worth? And so I've recommended Investor Carrot for a long, long time, and I'm glad to be on your podcast finally.
Man, and we appreciate the heck out of all the support over the years. And man, same thing. Like as you and I've got to know each other better, you came to two or three of our masterminds. The mm-hmm. one that I hold outside of Carrot Land. That's one I've been holding with my former business partner Patrick Riddle for 9 years now. I know you and I had crossed paths a lot. We talked on the phone many times, but we never met in person until I think it was out here in Bend at the first mastermind that you were in here
yes.
in Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, that was so much fun. And I knew you way before you knew me.
Yeah.
And it was cool to hang out with the Trevor and get to network with people in our mutual circles. And
yeah.
I tell you what, Trevor, I'm a big, big fan, a big, big believer in masterminds. And while we're gonna be seeing each other for the next couple months, three times, mm-hmm. three different events.
Yep. Yep.
We're part of these masterminds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to hang out with people that are smarter than you. And don't tell anybody else this, but you're smarter than me, Trevor.
Oh, man. Dude, every time at the Sedona one, like half of my notes came away from stuff you're teaching. And I'm like, man, that stuff that Joe's teaching, that he curated other amazing resources from other people. I'm like, oh, the way he presents is so awesome. And that's something I'm always pulling away from you every time we meet too, man. Like the tactical stuff.
Appreciate
that. Yeah, it was awesome.
Appreciate that.
I love it.
Let me say something too,
yeah.
to everybody else listening to this. You may not be at a level where you can go to a high level mastermind or something, but you know what? Create your own.
Mm.
And I've done this even in St. Louis. I created a mastermind of other wholesalers that are doing deals. It's invite only. You have to be doing deals. We meet just once a month. We took the summer off, but it's been amazing getting together with other investors, and anybody can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're not doing deals yet, so start a mastermind with other people that aren't doing deals yet, but try to get a few people in there maybe that just have done a couple deals, but like start surrounding yourself and you'll be amazed. I don't look at these people in these masterminds as my competition.
Yep.
I look at them as potential partners. Somebody that can share with me some of the mistakes they made, so help me avoid the same mistakes. So I'm a big believer in masterminds. My wife gives me a hard time. She says, "You're spending how much money to hang out with your friends?" I'm like, "Well, I'm not. I'm doing more than just hanging out with my friends.
We're
talking business." But I get so much incredible value out of that, and not only then at the meeting, but afterwards, if I need some, if I have a question, or I can pick up the phone and I can call 20, 30 guys that have my back. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I think masterminds are so important.
Dude, I'm with you in that. And me and Jason Medley actually did a call on masterminds a while ago here in the podcast. And one thing I'm sure that's popping up in people's minds as they're listening to this is they're going, okay, I love what Joe said, but what are the first steps? So for you, before, like everyone listening, if this is your first episode of the Carrot Cast, we're going to unpack a little bit of Joe's story here in a bit. I want to dive into what he's doing to really crack through this competitive market right now using wholesaling lease options. We're going to walk through what he's doing there and some of the resources that he's got, because he's doing some amazing stuff on the wholesaling lease option side of things. So hold on for that. But let me reverse all the way back to you creating that local mastermind. So what did you do the first 1, 2, 3 steps to create that?
That's a good, I had a big buyers list mm-hmm. already. So I emailed my buyers list. Hey, if you're doing deals, let's start a mastermind. Okay. And we'll meet once a week or once a month. There is a, I work out of my home office. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a big office to get everybody into. But there was another company who's probably the biggest investor here in the St. Louis area. I got him on board and I said, hey, can we use your office? He loved the idea because he's a money lender. He lends hard money and transactional money. And he's always looking for deals to buy. So he loved the idea of getting other investors and wholesalers into his office. And I told everybody, I just started picking up the phone and emailing. I said, listen, this is invite only. So we're only people that can come or people that are actively doing deals.
Yep.
And if you have a scarcity mindset, you're probably not going to be a good fit. So I started our first meetings with just, come on, let's hang out and let's talk about deals. Some of you have deals you want to sell and you don't have buyers for. Some of you have buyers and you don't have any deals for them. Some of you are looking for money. Some of you have questions like, how do I buy a mobile home park? Well, mm-hmm. there's people here that can do this. And so we started off our first meeting with everybody share, take one turn, talk about what are some needs that you have? What can you give and what are some needs that you have? And it was amazing. A lot of people started sharing like what's working now, what's working well, what's not working. You know, we talked a lot about bandit signs, like which neighborhoods do you not put bandit signs in, right? We started talking about like postcards or letters, you know, which are working better. Who are some of the good property management companies? Who are some of the good lenders? And it was amazing. It was like people start sharing stuff. And we've had so many people in that mastermind sell deals to each other, joint venture partner on deals, and co-wholesale deals. If you do it the right way, that's a very great way to make money. So it's really cool. And I started the group. I did have some name recognition, but anybody could have started that same group who is doing deals. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. Dude, did that answer the question?
It totally did. And the reason why I want to spend a couple minutes on this is because if you kind of look back to probably how you and I first got connected years ago was through a similar thing that I created in kind of the joint venture world in education and stuff. And the flip side of it was I didn't really have much name recognition in the industry. So I think a lot of people are looking at this going, well, of course Joe can do that because he's got this name. People know who he is. But when I created this group in the real estate education space, I didn't have name recognition, y'all. All I did is I saw the opportunity to connect people, trade value back and forth, and just connecting with people made it happen.
Let me tell you, you want to know how to make money and have a successful business, become good at networking. Mm-hmm. Whether you're doing deals in the info business, coaching, whatever, I'm always networking with people. I'm connecting people with. Excuse me. Like if somebody wants something or needs something, I say, hey, you need to talk to this guy.
Yeah.
He can help you. If I see somebody that comes out with a book, I say, hey, can I promote your book? Mm-hmm. Can I talk to people about you? And of course they're going to say yes. Right. So I'm always giving, giving, giving. I'm networking. I'm plugging people together. And there is such a thing as the good old boys club. Right. Yeah. And, everybody kind of, you either hate that group or you want to be in that group. Right. But let me tell you something. Whether you like it or not, there's a good old boys network and anybody can get in it. Mm-hmm. It's not an elite club. Anybody can get in it. You just have to give more than you can take and than you're willing to take. And if you're willing to give, give, give and help other people and bless them and you're going to get back way more eventually. It always works that way. Always.
Dude, I love it. So I want everyone to reverse and rewind that last 2 minutes. And if you're looking for a tip on how to grow your real estate business or any business, please do what Joe just mentioned, because I did it in my businesses in my life and it massively helped me by creating that mastermind. I've got two masterminds that I've created like that to connect with people like Joe and other people like that. And Joe's created it. And I know other people who've done similar things in their markets. They've gathered those minds in real estate or whatever it is that they're doing. And you never know what's going to come of that. Your first one, two, three, four meetings, you might think, well, shoot, you know, there's no structure here, or hardly anyone showed up, or whatever it is. Get momentum, add value, like Joe said, and the fruit of your labor is going to come out of that big time. So I love it.
Let me share with you more about that. Mm-hmm. Can I? And let's talk about it specifically when it comes to deals. Like most people here listening, they want to learn how to do more deals. I had a student who I challenge all my students with, like, scorecards. You need accountability. Your quickest path, your speed to income is directly proportional to the number of offers that you make. So let's create a scorecard. Every day you're going to make five offers. Well, how do you get that? Well, you got to have every day you got to talk to five sellers. Well, how do you get five leads? Well, you got to do this and this and this in your marketing every day, every week. So we create a scorecard and we say, all right, go make it happen. Then you have to report on your numbers every day. All right. So I had one student who is just crushing it. And he wasn't even meeting his numbers. He was only meeting half of his numbers. Like, he had a goal to send 500 letters a week, and he was only sending 250. Or he had, but you know what he was doing? He was going out and networking with property managers, title companies, investors, hedge funds, other wholesalers. And he got it. He understood. So he would go buy a dozen donuts, go to the title companies and say, hey, I just want to give you some donuts, you know? Do you know anybody who's doing a lot of deals? Who's an investor that comes in here all the time and does deals? He would take donuts to not always donuts either. He would take, you know, like those fruit bouquets. I forget what they're called.
Yeah, the edible arrangements.
He'd take those to property management companies. Huh. Hey, I'm an investor. I'm looking to buy some houses. Do you have any clients that might have a house they want to sell? Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a property management company that I can recommend to some of my other buyers. You know, can you tell me a little bit more about what you do? Here's some stuff. So he was constantly out there networking. And you know how he got most of his deals? By picking up the phone with people that he'd networked in the past and would just call them and ask them, talk to them, say, hey, do you have any deals? Or I've got some deals. Do you have any buyers?
Yeah.
And it's just, he started doing two or three deals a week within about a couple weeks, 3 weeks. And it, because And he gives the credit to the scorecard because that was really what kind of forced him to have something that would hold him accountable to, like, really kind of drilling down to the numbers. But it wasn't just number of letters that he sent or postcards that he sent. It was actually hitting the street, knocking on doors and talking to people, not hiding behind a computer, not sitting in the basement in his underwear, pushing the easy button, hoping money falls from the sky. He's actually picking up the phone, going to see people and networking. That's so important, so important.
So hugely important, y'all. So please, please, please take this to heart. Go out there and meet at least one new person in the next 24 hours and build that relationship. So that's your scorecard from this podcast right now. The next 24 hours, meet one new person that you can start to build that relationship with related to your business. So Joe, I always love to kind of go back and unpack what makes entrepreneurs tick. And you're someone who I would consider a high-performing person, a high-performing entrepreneur. And I know there's always things that we all want to improve, right? I mean, one thing I'm wanting to improve right now is my mornings. My morning routine isn't very good right now, and I need to make it better. But you are a high-performing entrepreneur, and I kind of want to go back. So before, I guess, let us know kind of how did you get into real estate, number one? Have you always been into real estate since you were born, or was there a transition? Did you have a job? Kind of what did that look like?
Okay. I had a degree in civil engineering. Mm-hmm. I've always been good at math and science, and so that's been a problem for me because I overanalyze everything. I've been really analytical and stuff. But I was working for a company building a power plant. I got a degree from Iowa State University, transferred to Kansas City, and then started traveling a lot. And I realized I didn't want to be living in this cubic hell for the rest of my life, right? Mm. I didn't like the corporate ladder. I didn't like where it was leaning. I looked at what middle managers were doing. And I'm thinking, these guys are working twice as hard as I am, and they get paid a little more. But when you look at the hourly wage that they're actually making, it's a lot less than I'm making that I want to ever make. And I don't want to be that middle manager. I didn't see myself climbing any higher than that because it's just really, really difficult. And the farther up you climb, the harder you have to work. Mm-hmm. This isn't for me. So I started thinking about entrepreneurial stuff. It's funny. My dad is a janitor, and he's always not always, since his mid-20s, has owned a business. And he started janitorial businesses. He started cleaning toilets and cleaning restaurants. And he's always been entrepreneurial. Whenever we've moved, and I moved a lot as a kid, he would start a new business. And he worked extremely hard, but he didn't have to answer to a boss. He had freedom. We could go travel when we wanted to. And so I kind of had that in me, I think, a lot of entrepreneurial bug. And now I was working in corporate in engineering. I liked it. I liked working with the people. I didn't like being a number with a badge, name badge that I had to clock in and clock out and sit in this cubicle. I'm not kidding. I was looking for a new office, and I went to my friend's office. He's an entrepreneur, and he had some extra space, right? But all he had left were these cubicles in the middle of the room. And I looked at him, and I felt sick to my stomach. I thought I was going to throw up. I thought, oh, this is bad. I can't do this. I got to get out of here. So I did. Like, I literally felt sick looking at this cubicle. But okay, so whatever. I started reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, like everybody did. And it was a really good book because I started thinking about cash flow quadrants, you know, going from employee to self-employed to business owner to investor, right? And I started getting interested in real estate, started hanging out with other friends that were getting into real estate and were excited about the book. I found there was two kinds of people, those that were excited about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and those that weren't, and maybe those who didn't care. So I started hanging out with people that were excited about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right? And then I started buying courses and books. I couldn't afford books at the time, so this is when you could go to eBay and buy used real estate courses, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I bought so many like used, they're probably pirated real estate courses on eBay, started devouring that stuff, really educating myself. In fact, probably educating myself too much because I was afraid to take action. It took me probably about 3 years before I really started doing anything with what I was learning. And by that time, I'd learned so much, I was frozen with like, where do I start, you know?
Yeah.
So I started actually buying homes from banks, like getting traditional loans with financing.
And what year was this around?
2006.
Okay, cool.
Market's going up. It never goes down. You look at the last 50 years, market conservatively has appreciated every year 5%. And I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. It may go down in California. It may go down in Florida and Phoenix, but it never goes down here. And if it does, it'll just flatten out. So I started buying based on appreciation, counting on appreciation, and then I started borrowing a lot of private money. Once the bank said you can't borrow any more money from us, I started going out and borrowing private money from private lenders, doing subject twos, buying houses creatively and with owner financing and stuff. And I had a bunch of homes, and then all of a sudden the market started softening, and then the market started falling. And I had a lot of vacancies. I was hemorrhaging cash. And lost my house to short sale, lost some of my investments to foreclosures. And it was a really, really difficult time for me. So my back was against the wall. I had to take some serious action. And I wanted to quit my job. So I started wholesaling. And I said to myself, I'm going to buy one more course. But I'm going to, in this time, I'm going to do what the guy says. And this is Chris Chico. You know Chris Chico's course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was called Absentee Owner Profits at the time. I said, I'm going to do what this guy says to do. I don't like his postcards. I don't like his scripts. I don't like his contracts because I thought I knew better.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to do what he says. I'm not going to question it. I'm not going to change it. He's given me a recipe on how to do deals. I'm going to trust him, and I'm going to do it. Doggone it. So like, that's where I was, right? And I started just doing what Chico said to do. And I started working. I started doing deals. Then fast forward 6, 8, 12 months, and I was doing some wholesaling here and there. But I was spending a lot of money, throwing away a lot of leads. And I thought, and I liked lease options. So I thought, you know, if I'm doing regular wholesaling deals, I'm selling the deal with equity to an investor buyer. What if I could sell deals with no equity to tenant buyers? And so I said, what if I wholesale lease options? And I didn't invent the strategy, but I didn't know anybody else that was doing it at the time. Started digging around on the internet. I found some people that were doing it. And it's real simple. Instead of selling your contract to a cash buyer or an investor, you sell your lease option contract to a tenant buyer, and you get an assignment fee in the middle, anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, $7,000. So this is in 2009. And I start doing this. And within 3 months, I quit my job. And I'm making more money doing that part-time than I was in my full-time job. And I quit my job in 2009 and haven't looked back.
Dude, so I want to kind of unpack a couple things there. So number one, you've been through a market cycle. You know, you've been through a full market cycle, the upswing, the downswing. You knew it worked in those. But also the cool thing about it, you can really tell when you talk with someone who has been through the downswing part of it versus someone who's just been in this last upswing the last 7 or 8 years. And you've got perspective there that a lot of those people don't have. And I had Edward Beck on our podcast. He's a client of ours from San Antonio, Texas, or El Paso, Texas, actually. And he built a big house flipping business before, crashed it, you know, and then same thing. He has this different perspective. So it's a small operation now. He doesn't have dozens of employees, high profit margin, only does these types of deals and has this other, you know, he just got a really well-balanced company that fits exactly what he wants it to do this time, which is pretty cool.
Well, some of my favorite podcasts that I've ever done have been with those guys from the 80s that have been investing, and they've seen two or three different complete market cycles, you know, and there's some things that change, but there's some things that never do. And there's some things that, you know, maybe classified ads aren't the places where you find sellers anymore, but they're still the same principles. There's just the platforms have changed. And so I do feel like I have a pretty good perspective on the market because I've been through the up and then the down and back up. I think it's going to come back down again. I think it's flattening and it's starting to climb down. You know, it won't be as precipitous as it was before, you know. But I think people, this is really, really important. You've always got to be thinking of, there's a great book, Who Moved My Cheese? I read that back in early 2000s. And it's all about being aware of the market condition around you and what, because the market changes. And the coolest thing about real estate, Trevor, is that unlike the stock market, which stops and changes on a dime, and you could be down 10% and lose billions of dollars in market value overnight, right? With real estate, it's a lot slower. You know, when the market finally crashed in 2009, when Lehman Brothers, I think, went out of business and all that. And then the lenders, like there was one day when they just said, we're not lending anymore. If you remember that, there you could see the writing on the wall for at least a year before that. If you were paying attention, you know, the days on market were getting longer and longer and longer. The prices were going down. It was taking, you got fewer bids on your houses that you were listing. And so you, if you were just paying attention, you could hear it. You could knew something was happening. And it, the cool thing about real estate, it is a slow process. I remember seeing when the market started coming back up again in 2011 and 2012, I could see days on market coming shorter. I could see more cash investors coming in the market. And it wasn't just a quick change overnight. I mean, if people in 2013 were thinking, oh, man, it's too late to get into the turnkey business, are completely wrong, because there was still a lot of opportunity between the even a year after the bottom where you could still be doing deals and making money today. So the idea is you always got to study the market. Don't overreact. Be patient, but be aware of where the conditions are going. And again, it's not like it goes up and down real quick and then back up again like the stock market would. You start seeing it come down again, and it's going to go down again for a little while and then come back up maybe. But I think investors today especially need to be start educating themselves on creative real estate because lease options, owner financing, subject tos and things like that, contract for deeds, those become a lot easier to do when the market starts going down for a lot of reasons. But I think it's really, really important that investors get some education on how to do that, you know, and how to – you might have a rehab that you bought 6-8 months ago. You've over-rehabbed. You put too much money into it. Now you're trying to sell it, and you can't because the prices are coming down. What do? You need to have – people have forgotten over the last 5-6 years that they need to have multiple exit strategies. And so it's important to have that, don't you think?
Oh, big time it is. And I was talking with Ramon Gonzalez, a client of ours out of Miami, and he was talking about the market cycle stuff too. And he was doing a lot of house flipping before. He saw the last, you know, 2-3 years – happening where houses were getting overbid and things were getting hot in Miami. So he started to curtail that part of the business down, started just wholesale, stockpiling cash. And then same thing now he, and he bought a bunch of rentals after the last downturn. So then he cashed out all the rentals in the last six to 8 months.
Yeah.
Has a pile of cash. Now he's loaning money out and he's kind of looking at what's my next move. And it's interesting because I know for myself, Joe, one thing I've been really, really bad at is really like, I'll know what indicators to look at. You know, I know that the market's going to be shifting, but then I don't proactively take moves as much as I should, knowing the knowledge that I've got, to then set myself up to really capitalize on that phase of the market. So what are you doing right now in this real estate market to set yourself up for the next phase? What are you doing right now?
It's a great question. It's one of the reasons why I love wholesaling so much, mm-hmm. whether you're wholesaling to investors or to tenant buyers using lease options, because you're in and out of a deal so quickly, right? I understand why people fix and flip. You can make big $40,000, $50,000 paydays. But that same time that you're putting all of that money at risk, you're working with all of those different variables that you can't control with contractors and inspectors and municipalities, buyers, realtors, title companies, all that stuff that just can happen. When that rehab that takes 3 to 6 months, I can wholesale 4, 5, 6 deals during that time and make the same amount of money as you did on your rehab.
Yeah.
So I like rehabs because you're in and you're out real quickly and you're just trading paper. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Preston Ely, when he first was doing wholesaling back in 2004 and 2005, you know, when he started teaching wholesaling, he really shook a lot of things up back then because people weren't really doing that. And they looked down on wholesalers.
Yep.
I think wholesaling is a very important skill to understand, because here's the cool thing. No matter what market the direction it's going, you're always buying properties at a discount or on favorable terms, okay? And you're selling that contract within a matter of weeks. You're not holding properties for months and months at a time. A lot can happen in a few months, right? So, and the other cool thing about wholesaling and lease options is, let's say the deal you got under contract was not a good deal. You can get out of it. You can cancel your contract. You can go back and renegotiate. You can walk away, depending on how you structure it up front. But like, it's easier. So all you need to do, and this is so important in any market condition, whatever cycle it's going in, you need to know what the smart money is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the buyers? Okay. What are they looking for? If it's cash buyers, even when the market was falling and it was at its bottom, there were still people buying houses.
Yeah.
You just have to know, okay, what are they looking for? If they're buying properties at this, then I'm going to offer 10 grand less and I'm going to give them a deal at that.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can still make good money. You just got to be looking ahead. It's like a deer that when you're hunting and you're shooting a deer and it's running, you got to aim in front of the deer, right? Yeah. And if the deer is running downhill, which it might be right now, okay, you need to aim in front of that deer downhill and then you'll hit it.
Yeah.
So being aware of who your buyers are, I'll say this one more thing. It's much easier if you were to go make a spaghetti, bowl of spaghetti and go out on the street and try to sell it. Like nobody would want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to go out and start taking orders of what people want to eat and then go making it, you'd be able to sell it all day long. It's so much easier to sell people what they want instead of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're out there rehabbing a lot of houses, you're stuck with selling what you have.
Yep.
Well, with wholesaling, you can go out and find out what people want. Whether you're doing this as a licensed realtor, as a wholesaler, investor, whatever, you go find out what people want and go out and get it for them. It's the easiest way to make money in real estate today.
So what
When you're talking about my market, where am I going at? What am I trying to do in this market? That's it. I want to know what my buyers are looking for.
Totally. So talking on that topic there, and I know a lot of different ways that some people do this. I'm kind of curious in your method. So are you picking up the phone, calling your buyers, or are you sending them out an email survey? Kind of what are you doing to figure out exactly what they're looking
for? You want
to
know a secret?
Let's hear it, man. Let's hear it. Your best stuff.
This is gold because I like you so much, Trevor. It's so easy to find who are the buyers right now and what are they buying through public records, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to ListSource. By the way, I just signed up with DataTree. Have you heard of DataTree?
I have not, no.
DataTree.com. Uh-uh. I'm really, really liking it. If you call them and say, hey, I heard this guy, Joe McCall, and he's giving – I think you can tell them. Go ahead and tell them. I'm getting 10,000 records for $300 a month, which is about 3 cents a record, which is really, really good. Okay, cool. That's really good. And if you tell them, you can negotiate the prices. But anyway, you can go with services like DataTree or ListSource or RealQuest and say, all right, show me – you can go and look. What are some of the hot top 12 turnkey markets right now in the U.S.? There's Columbus, Ohio, maybe Memphis, Tennessee, Houston, Texas maybe. Mobile, Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama, Jacksonville, Florida. Go find then there's a bunch more. Indianapolis, Kansas City, Missouri. So go find where a lot of out-of-state investors are coming in and buying rental properties, okay? Mm-hmm. And you can go to public records and find out who they are. And then what I like to do is I go in and I say, all right, show me in Marion County in Indianapolis, show me all of the absentee owners – the investors that bought a property in the last 6 months who live outside of Indiana.
Okay.
So you can select, show me out-of-state investors that are buying in the last 6 months. And those are the best buyers for a lot of reasons because, number one, they're already comfortable with buying properties outside of their state. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they tend to pay a higher premium on properties because you can sell them the service of being local. You're their boots on the ground. You can provide the property management companies and the contractors and the services. So you can charge more to an out-of-state investor than you can to a local investor because there's more that's involved with that. You can charge a premium for that. So anyway, those out-of-state buyers are the best buyers. So what I like to do, and I do this still in St. Louis, I'll send letters to people that are buying, to investors that are buying in the Columbus, Ohio area, or Cleveland, Ohio, or Kansas City, or in other markets outside of St. Louis. They're already buying properties outside of this market in other cities outside of those states. I send them a letter saying, hey, I see that you just bought this property and so-and-so. It tells me that you're probably an investor. If you're looking to grow and expand and do more deals, we are the premier real estate investing company in the St. Louis area. Give me a call. I'd love to talk with you. And then what makes me stand out with all my other competition is when they call my office, somebody answers the phone.
Gotcha, yep.
And I've had buyer after buyer after buyer tell us, I'm doing deals with you because you're the only one that answers their phone when I call, right? And so one of my students, he's doing over 100 deals a year. He's been doing that consistently for 4 years now. And that's all he does. He does not market for sellers ever. Hmm. All he does is he markets for buyers. He answers his phones. They love him, right?
Yep.
And then once he gets some good buyers, he calls everybody he knows in the area and says, hey, I got $5 million burning a hole in my pocket. Give me some deals. I'm looking for deals. And he has his realtor's license, so he's kind of acting like an investor and a realtor at the same time. But he's crushing it because he's following the cheese. He sees, okay, where is the cheese going? What are these guys looking for? What do they want? And he's always marketing for buyers. He never stops. Well, he does stop sometimes and he calls me and says, Joe, what's going wrong? I'm struggling. Why, things are slowing down. And I said, when was the last time you did any marketing for buyers? Oh, yeah, that's right. He does that all the time. It's like, come on, Rick, do some more marketing. But that's I forget what the question was, but I'm pretty sure that was about what you were asking for, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember what the question was either, but the answer was amazing. It was a good answer. No, I think
that's where the money is.
Yep.
Find out where the buyers are, what they want, and go get it for them. Mm-hmm. And they're so easy to find out where they are through ListSource or RealQuest or DataTree. Go find them, send them letters, and when they call, for God's sake, answer the phone.
So do you have someone in your office answering the phone? Is it a call center? Kind of what are you doing there?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The way I do it is we have a virtual assistant. Mm-hmm. That answers the phone. I just interviewed a really cool guy. He has a service called Call Porter. Mm-hmm. His name is Ryan. He used to be in St. Louis. Porter.
He's a Carrot customer.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Oh, that's right. I looked at his website and I said, this doesn't look like a Carrot website. And he said, well, it is. And it's got a weird domain name, but he's ranking really high in SEO.
Yeah.
And he said, you guys helped him with all of that. Like he's number on the first page. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, we've got our concierge level services where on the concierge side of things, we work with investors who are consistently doing deals who want a little bit different visual on their website. But yeah, they want the visual differentiation, but still want the high converting Carrot framework. And the SEO, I think they did the SEO themselves, maybe with our guidance from our coaching calls.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But we definitely didn't do his SEO. But I know he's showing up to our coaching calls a lot. And he's like, I'm on the top of page two for this keyword. What do I do next? And we just tell him, we like diagnose it on that call. We say, do these three things and come back in 2 weeks kind of thing. Yeah.
He's doing one or two deals a month from his SEO.
Yep.
So anyway, he has a service called Call Porter. I've done it a lot of different ways. I'll have a VA in the Philippines sometimes answer the phones live. I'll dabble a little bit. I don't use Call Porter. I've used some live answering services before. It's hard to find good ones. Mm-hmm. And then when I am, we're doing a lot of outbound cold calling right now. So that we're using a virtual assistant in the Philippines, using our dialer to do that. And that's working really well. But when I am, a lot of times I'll partner with other local wholesalers in different markets. Like when we travel around the world and stuff like that, I partner with local wholesalers who I make sure they're the type of wholesaler that answers the phones live. Mm-hmm. And when I'm working with like the, somebody who is I'm marketing for buyers for, I make sure they're the type of person that gets it. You know, they answer their phones. I know when I call them, if they don't answer the phone, they're going to shoot me a text message back real quick that says, I'll call you right back.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, they answer the phone. If they don't, they call me back within 1 or 2 minutes.
That's such a big deal. So I kind of want to go back and talk about market conditions there and tie it to that, tie it to how to stand out, tie it to wholesaling lease options, tie it to the whole thing. Is like you mentioned, we're in a market right now where in many parts of the country, it could be the top or over the top of the top. You're coming back down the bottom side. I'll hear a lot of people in different parts of the country where they're saying, oh, it's still going up really, really fast in our area. And it might be, but I don't want people to be delusional thinking that's going to keep on going for years. And so a question we get a lot here at Carrot is, how do I stand out with all this competition? Because when a market gets hot, you get more agents, you get more people that want to be real estate agents, you get more people that want to be real estate investors, which means there's more people kind of in that pot going for the same pool of deals. And so one of the things you just mentioned there is one way to stand out that people discount in a big way is, are you answering the darn calls live and you're answering them fast? What are some other things that you suggest people do in this market to stand out, not just marketing wise, but strategy? How do they come at deals in a different way than someone else who's just looking to straight up wholesale a deal every time?
That's huge.
How do you stand out?
There's a lot of answers to that. And I think it goes back to being brilliant at the basics. My previous book that is not available now, but I'm going to be revising it and updating it. It's called Being Brilliant at the Basics. And it's just remembering those simple basic things and being really, really good at them. Mm. You know, you can't go broke making money. So what are those simple things that you could be doing every day that are going to make you stand out above your competition? Number one, answer your phones. Mm-hmm. Number two, always make an offer to every single lead that comes in. Always, always, always make an offer. Not just by email, not just by phone, but by physical mail. Mm-hmm. Send a letter to the seller. Hey, it was great talking to you today. I know now may not be a good time for you to sell, but here's some other options for you. Here's an offer. Take a look at it. And if circumstances change, call me back. I'd love to talk with you, right? Mm-hmm. So now they have a physical letter that they can put in their junk drawer, put on their fridge, and they'll maybe hold on to that and think of it. You know, if in 2 or 3 months they're like, who is that guy again that made me that offer? They're not going to be able to find your email, but they're going to maybe find that letter that you sent them. So send an offer to every single seller. And then the other thing is follow up. That is probably the most important thing because we're finding that our deals right now, they come on average after the fourth or fifth touch. Mm-hmm. And so it's the more no's we get, the more excited we get because that means we're going to have more leads to follow up with next month.
Yeah.
So every single month, download all of your old leads, send them a handwritten letter or postcard or send them something in the mail, send them an email, send them a text message, send them a Sly broadcast, send them carrier pigeons or something like follow up with your old leads. And if you – I see so many investors that have – they call it the woodpile. You know, all these leads are sitting out there and – like, we don't do anything with them. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, the money is in the follow-up. That's the best list you could ever mail to. And let's say you're broke and you've got no money for marketing and you're just like, what do? Start networking with other investors that have a bunch of old leads and just call them and say, hey, listen, you know, what are you doing with your old leads? Could you let me call all of your old leads and I'll bring you any deals I get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that wholesaler or investor is going to say? Yeah, sure. Here they are. Take them.
Yeah.
And you start getting on the phone and you start calling those old leads and you start following up and you're going to find deals in those old leads. So always be following up. It's real simple. Answer the phones, make offers, 5 offers a day, and follow up, follow up, follow up, follow up. And that's how you're going to stand out above your crowd, the competition.
Man, so talking about the follow-up side, so a mutual friend of ours, Alex Pardo, and a Carrot customer, we were partnering with him on some stuff. It was almost 2 years. It was like 18 months ago in the Miami market. And so we were driving him traffic. We were splitting deal profits. And it was harder in the Miami market, honestly. It was a lot harder. And that's the reason we took it on, because I wanted the challenge. I'm like, he couldn't make pay-per-click work in his market. I'm like, this works. I swear it does. So I paid for all the traffic. We drove it all. And it was funny where it was like literally a month ago, he texts me and he goes, hey, he goes, you're not going to believe this, but that one lead we were working 18 months ago that kind of went into contract and went out of contract and then just wouldn't answer us back for over a year. He goes, we're closing it this Friday. He goes, what, you know, where's your wire information? And I'm going 18 months ago. So what were you guys doing for follow-up? He's doing exactly what Joe just mentioned there. They were sending some fly broadcasts, email, some direct mail pieces over time. And it wasn't a ginormous deal, but I mean, we each cashed about a $5,500 to $6,000 check 18 months after that lead initially came in because of follow-up.
Man, one of my wholesalers in one of my markets just 2 or 3, 4 days ago called me and said, hey, we got a deal. And it was an old lead that he's been following up with, and it's been about 12, 14 months. Mm-hmm. I hear that over and over and over and over again. In fact, I have one student who texted a seller about a property that was listed for rent. And he said, hey, you wouldn't be interested in selling, would you? And the seller said, no. But the guy, you know what he did? He called him back and said, you know what? I know you said no. I know you don't want to sell this house, but I really love this neighborhood. Is there anything I could say to change your mind? Right? And the guy, he's like, well, you know, I don't want to sell this house, but I've got 4 or 5 others I might be interested in selling.
Really?
And so you know what happens? He goes from a no, when most of us would say, and throw it away or whatever. He calls him anyway. Mm-hmm. And he got 4 properties under contract. And the last I heard from him, I don't know what's happened to those, but I know he made some money from some of those deals. Mm-hmm. And the point is, oh, here's another thing too. Here's a quick tip. We send a lot of text messages out to rentals and landlords. Some of the best leads are the ones that don't respond to our texts. They don't say yes or no. They just never respond. A lot of those are landlines. And so we're starting to call them now, and we're getting deals from that because for whatever reason, they're not, no one else is doing it, right? Mm-hmm. No one else is calling them, and they're not getting any other text messages from anybody. And usually they're old school landlords, mom and pop landlords. They're like, I'd sell that. I got a bunch of others too. Why don't you look at those?
Mm-hmm. Dude, that's so big right there. And a lot of people, like, once again, kind of going back to questions Carrot customers ask us, is they'll say, okay, cool. You know, cold calling is working great for us. Direct mail is working great for us. Text messaging and things like that are working great for us. How do we make it play well with the online side of things? There's a customer of ours, Carter, out of Oklahoma. He owns a company called 1-800-2-SELL-HOMES. I'm pretty sure they're the largest home buyer in Oklahoma. And anyway, they were doing exclusively offline marketing, TV, radio, direct mail, cold calling, things like that. And he sent me an email about a month after switching over to Carrot, and he didn't believe it either. He's like, a website's a website. He had a custom site before. And
that's so wrong.
Oh, man. And he went through our concierge program. So we dialed in the visual for him, brought in his branding. And he sent this email, like I said, 3-4 weeks after. And he goes, man, results are amazing. And he walked through what it was. And essentially, they're getting about double the leads from their website they were before with no online marketing, only offline, because what happens is they're making the phone calls, they're sending the direct mail, they're doing TV and radio. People take out their cell phone, they Google their company.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were already finding their company before. Like, their company was already popping up. The difference was when they landed on their own website, especially from mobile devices, it wasn't set up to engage the visitor very well. It wasn't set up to convert them into a lead very well. And so they've essentially doubled their lead flow. And there's a bunch more stats he sent through too. And he goes, man, you're probably going to add $300,000 or $400,000 to our bottom line from this one switch. So if people are looking at this going, you're thinking about it, so how does offline work with online? Make sure that when you're doing any of those things that Joe's talking about, that you think about what the person's going to do before they make a decision. Usually they're going to research you. And is your website not just showing up when they research you, but actually converting well on mobile? Yeah, there we go. And there's one of Joe's.
Look how good it looks on mobile. This is my rent to own one for lease options. it's just nice. And people do Google you. And here's the other really important thing with what Trevor's saying. Once you do get leads from your – and this ties it all in with what we were just saying. Mm-hmm. Once somebody visits your website and they put in their name and phone number and email, call them. Like, you need to call them within 5 seconds.
Yep.
And they're going to say, like, wow, that's amazing. I'm so impressed that you called me so fast. And then you can say something cool like, well, wait until you see how fast we can buy your house. You know? That's not mine. I borrowed that from the guy at Call Porter, by the way.
Yeah, I love it.
That's what they say to their people that come to them from the website.
I love that, man. So I want to talk wholesaling lease options now. And I know you've got a book. And first of all, I love having books on my desk, like literally right here. This is a book where I'm diving into a topic and I'm like, I want the darn thing in front of me. So before we get further down this, where can people go and get your book that you wrote on the topic of wholesaling lease options?
Cool, right here. WLObook.com, WLObook.com. It's about wholesaling lease options. And you can get it for free there. Just pay shipping and handling. Mm-hmm. It's a simple book. It takes you maybe a couple hours to go through it, maybe three max. And I just kind of shared my journey of how I quit my job in 2009 using this strategy and how we're still doing these types of deals today. Mm-hmm. And I get so many testimonials from people about how much easier these deals are to do. It's not for everybody. We still do regular wholesaling, but I still love lease options. This is my favorite strategy. I think this is the best strategy to get started with. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of talks about how to do these deals. They're really, really simple. I tried to make this book bigger, I swear. but I couldn't make it any bigger. It's like, this is pretty simple, straightforward. And it's a good book. Just released it about a week ago.
Cool.
And it's nice. I'm proud of it. Although as I'm going through it, I'm like, oh, I should have changed that. I should have.
Of course.
But it'll never be perfect. I love the book though. And it's WLObook.com. And there's some other special things that you can get on the website as you go there too. And yeah, that's cool. That's all I was going to say about the book.
Yeah. So go there, y'all. Go to WLObook.com, WLObook.com. Grab Joe's book on wholesaling lease options. Just pay the shipping. And so let's kind of break down a little bit of it, because as we talk about being in a competitive market, there's an example I actually shared in a podcast that we're publishing probably a week before this one's published, where I talked about a client of ours. They were like one of our core case studies for about 2 years. And they're doing 30, 40, 50 deals a year, all from online, all from Carrot. And then all of a sudden their lead source didn't dry up. Their lead source stayed there. But the problem was their deals dried up. They stopped closing deals. And I said, what's going on? And they said, well, you know, it just seems like we're making these offers and they're not getting accepted like before. And there's a lot more competition. Long story short, they're out of business. And we bought their website from them. We resold it to another client of ours who just came at the market, you know, towards the current needs the market has. And he pulled deals out within 30 days. And he paid us back basically on the $25,000 purchase within 60 days of buying the website. Same lead source, different strategies. So how does wholesaling lease options really play to a market like this, where most of the newer people out there are all trying to fit everything into this box? Everything goes in this box. Everything else gets thrown in a trash bin, like you mentioned. Where does wholesaling lease options come in?
You're giving me a layup.
I know.
This is So here's the thing. You need to learn creative real estate stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just giving the seller one offer is not going to work anymore, in my opinion, especially coming forward in the next few years. Just having one offer to give the seller is not going to work. You need to be able to give them multiple offers. And so when I'm sitting with a seller and talking to them, I'm more concerned about their situation, not the house, not the numbers, their situation. What's going on? Why can't you sell this house? Why haven't you sold it yet? What are you going to do if you can't sell it? Are you going to rent it out? Why don't you just list it with a realtor? What's going on? And just trying to find out their situation. And you may find out that a cash offer won't work. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they owe too much. Maybe they don't want to pay the taxes on it when they do sell it in the capital gains. And so you need to be able to offer them something else besides a cash offer. And when it comes to a lease option, I like them better than subject twos or owner financing, because I believe they give – there's less risk to the investor, less risk to the seller, and you can still make the same amount of profit, mm-hmm. okay, on a lease option as you can with a subject to or owner financing. And it's just another option. You know, it's like I tell the sellers I could go through the whole script. In fact, I'll tell you what. If you get the book, I have in the book the questions and the scripts and how I talk to sellers and how I explain it. And I'm going to be adding real soon here as a bonus to the website my actual seller script that I use for these deals that you can get for free with the book. But I just ask a lot of questions. And when I make the offers, I use a 3-option letter of intent. Mm. If they say no, like I'm not interested, I'll send them. I say, well, there might be some other things that we could do for you. So I give them a cash offer. I give them a sandwich lease option offer. That means I'm going to stay in the middle. And I give them a lease option assignment offer where I'm just going to assign my interest. And I don't care which offer they take because I'm going to make some money on each of them. And each of them solves a need that the seller has. So it's all about listening to the sellers, finding out what their situation is, ask them, what would you like to see happen? Mm-hmm. If I can make that happen, could we do business today? If they say, yeah, I say, all right, so let's talk about the numbers. How much do you owe on the house? How much do you want to walk away with? What's the least you take? Boy, I don't know if I can get you that. That's a little too high. What if I could get you that? Would you be willing to rent it for a year and then sell it? Mm-hmm. And that opens the door right into lease options. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. So what's the avatar for this seller that you guys are finding are normally gravitating towards the wholesaling lease options option you give them?
Yeah, it's the tired landlord.
Okay.
It's the homeowner that just moved because of job transfer or job loss or divorce or downsizing. And they thought they could sell their house by now and they haven't yet. Mm-hmm. And they have 2 mortgage payments and they're getting stressed because they don't think they can do this much longer. So they've resigned the fact that they're going to have to rent the house out, but they don't want to be a landlord.
Yep.
They're worried about managing tenants, difficult tenants. They're worried about landlord headaches, getting calls at 3 a.m. about a leaky faucet. And so I can present an option, a lease option to them. It's not the best alternative, but it's the least worst one, right?
Yep.
And I set up all my deals as win-win-wins, and I make sure the seller knows that, and they're very risk averse, you know? So I don't, even when I get a property under contract, Trevor, I'm not tying it up. I don't tie up these properties. If the seller rents it or sells it before I put a tenant buyer in it, they can cancel my agreement. Hmm. And it doesn't cost them anything.
Cool.
So it's very low risk. And it's really easy, actually, when you explain it in simple terms, it's really easy to convince a seller to do a lease option.
So one thing you mentioned there, and I want to kind of unpack this a little bit, is people call it a risk reversal or, you know, whatever in marketing speak, where you look at the different resistance points that someone may have. And it doesn't matter if it's real estate or you're selling anything, but your prospects are going to have resistance points. Figure out what those are. One of those is exactly what you mentioned there, that the seller's going, well, shoot, you know, what if it's going to take you a month to get a person in here? And I find a person tomorrow that wants to buy this. Well, shoot, that's a risk point. So you remove that. Yeah. You reverse the risk. Yeah. So the risk is on you now, where you're putting the property under contract. You might even invest time and money over the next 2 weeks trying to get a tenant in there, doing all that work. And if they get someone on day 13, day 15, whatever it is, you're the only one at risk at that point.
Well, I win more deals than I lose by doing that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it just makes sense. And I don't want to be accused of tying up that property and taking it off the market if 3 months later, I've still not found anybody for it because it's overpriced or because it's a bad neighborhood. I don't want to be accused of taking that house off the market and tying it up. So it's really important. When you're doing lease options, you only do them on win, where you create win-win-wins for the seller, for the tenant buyer, and for you. And the second thing I'll say about this is I only do lease options on nice homes in nice areas. And I only put tenant buyers in homes that have a realistic chance of getting a mortgage in 1 or 2 years. Gotcha. Some people teach, you know, just put the first person in that can fog a mirror that has $5,000 to put down. That's the worst mistake you could make. Only put people in the house that have a realistic chance of getting a mortgage in 1 or 2 years that can afford the house, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're only dealing with nice homes in nice areas, you're avoiding a ton of the problems that most investors have who do lease options in lower end neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So there's important things you got to learn about. And I talk about that in the book.
And I've got one last question on this. And like I said, everybody go get the darn book because it answers all these questions and every other question you've got in your mind. It's all in there. But one question that popped up to me is you mentioned you'll make them an offer, you'll make them a sandwich lease offer, and then the offer of a lease option with assignment. So what mechanically is different between the sandwich lease and the one where you're going to wholesale the lease option? Because I know that that question is probably popping up in people's minds where they're like, yeah, I don't quite get what the difference is.
Well, I always approach it like I'm going to stay in the middle, mm-hmm, because I make more money with that, but it's sometimes it's what the seller wants. Like they're just, I might ask them, I say, do you want me to deal with all the tenant headaches and hassles, pay the rent, whether it's vacant or not? Or would you rather deal with the tenant yourself? Mm-hmm. Would you rather me deal with the tenant, or would you rather deal with the tenant? Every seller is going to say, like, I'd rather have someone else deal with the tenant, right?
Yeah.
So I say, well, this may not work for you, and it's totally cool to say no, no big deal. Like, I'm never chasing sellers, right? Mm-hmm. I say, but here's what I could possibly do. I can get you the same equity you'd get if you sold with a realtor, and I could probably get you the same rent every month that you would get if you were to use a property management company. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to stay in the middle. Mm-hmm. I call it my perfect tenant program. I'm going to stay in the middle because I'm going to be the tenant and I'm going to take care of the property. I'm not going to live in it. I'm going to put one of my tenant buyers in there, but I'm going to work with them, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't go into a lot of detail when I'm talking to them on the phone because I have an investor credibility kit, like a lease option package thing that I give to all my sellers that explains it and answers a ton of questions and stuff and lists the benefits. Mm-hmm. So I'm never chasing them, begging them to do business with me. It's like, here it is, take it or leave it. This may work for you. It may not. No big deal. So I'm never on the phone for that much, for that long a time. I can talk to a lot of sellers in one day. And, but the difference between the two is in the sandwich lease option, I'm staying in the middle and there's three profit centers in a sandwich lease option: cash now, cash flow, and cash later. Hmm. I can make some money now, make good $300-$400 a month cash flow in between, and I make some back end profit at the back end. So on a sandwich lease option, you should be making at a minimum $30,000 to $40,000 on a good deal.
Gotcha.
On a lease option assignment or a wholesaling lease option deal, I get the property under contract to lease option, and the seller knows this in advance. I'm just going to assign my contract to another intended buyer. The seller gets final approval, but I tell them I'm going to keep the option deposit as my assignment fee. Mm-hmm. And I work with a special escrow company and a mortgage broker that works with the tenant buyer during that time. So I tell them this is what I do. And sometimes, I'll give the seller 1 month's rent out of the money that I collect from the tenant buyer. But typically on a lease option assignment, wholesaling lease option deal, I make anywhere from, $5,000 to $7,000.
Gotcha. Cool. I love it. So everybody go to WLObook.com, grab the rest of it, because Joe breaks it down over there. And I can tell you all from the education side of it, Joe's in my mastermind. We're going to see each other in Charleston in a couple months. And every time Joe goes up there and breaks down his strategies, I'm always taking lots of notes because he does it in a really simple way, but it's also really strategic, and it, like, the light bulb goes off for me. So I haven't read this book, but my assumption is he does the same thing there. So head over to WLObook.com. And Joe, dude, I so appreciate the heck out of you hopping on this podcast. We're nearing the hour mark right now, and I definitely want to have you back again. It'd be fun kind of breaking down in the future what you do for your motivated seller marketing, things like that. You already talked on this episode what you do for your cash buyer marketing, what you're doing to make sure you're preparing for this next market, how other people can do the same. So that was awesome. And we dove into wholesaling lease options. So maybe next time we'll dive into motivated seller marketing. And we could do it even just like a little fireside chat at one of the events we're going to be at.
Well, I was thinking about that. We should.
Yeah, let's do
that. We could get our iPhones out and just record something. And I'm going to have you on my show, I think, in a week or two as well. Get you on my podcast.
Yep, let's do it, man. So I appreciate it. Is there anything, I guess, where can people find out about you more than WLObook.com? Where can they follow you, see your cool information in your podcast too?
Well, I guess the podcast is the best place. Mm-hmm. RealEstateInvestingMastery.com is my podcast. RealEstateInvestingMastery.com. You can look me up on iTunes or Stitcher, all of them. Or JoeMcCall.com, mm-hmm, or Facebook. I think Facebook, that's where I kind of put pictures of my kids and my dog and the deer in our backyard. So, or you'll see me on my, what do they call that thing? A Segway going around my yard. So if you want to see that, then go to Facebook.
Sweet. Well, Joe, I appreciate you, man. Have an awesome rest of the week. I'll see you in a few weeks or about a month, I think it is. And Charleston's the first one. And then October, I'll see you in Tampa. And then again in North Carolina.
Asheville,
North Carolina. That's right, man. Well, Joe, I appreciate that, guy, to be both as a friend and a client. And everybody, if you're looking to learn more about what Joe is doing or just follow him, go to joemccall.com, grab the book at wlobook.com, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Awesome. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Carrot Cast with my friend Joe McCall. Joe and I have known each other for years, and we finally got him on the podcast. Let's celebrate that little win right there. But if you're not a part of a mastermind, go to our marketplace. If you weren't aware, you can go check out some of the masterminds that I'm a part of, and you can meet me at some of those masterminds. Just go to oncarrot.com/marketplace and scroll down. You'll find access to one or two masterminds that I'm a part of that I vet. I know the people who run them, and they're amazing. If you're not ready for a bigger mastermind like that, create your own. Joe did it. I did it. You can do it too. Just follow the steps that Joe and I lined out in there. Connect a group of people locally and start to share ideas. Start to share ideas, share what's working, share what's not working, and really amplify each other. Okay, last but not least, if you're interested in wholesaling lease options, check out Joe's book, WLObook.com. Check it out. It's free. Just pay for shipping. And I can get that book and dive in and see if you can add that strategy to your tool belt as this market heats up. Last little tidbit here for y'all is I'm so pumped about what our clients are doing. So pumped about it. We get doses of awesomeness every single day from clients just like you going out there and crushing it with Carrot. People that moved over from other platforms, from a custom WordPress site or from one of our competitors, and found the difference in performance. Oftentimes it's hard to see the difference in performance until you truly test the two side by side. And what I can tell you is there's more data that proves and shows that moving your site over to Carrot, dialing in the personalization of it, is going to give you a massive boost in your ROI at the end of the year if you're driving traffic to it. So we so much appreciate the doses of awesomeness you guys keep on sending us about the big difference we're making in your bottom line in your business just by moving over to or staying with Carrot. Now, the next thing is also a lot of people say, hey, I'd love to be able to stand out visually and look different. I'm a high-end investor. I'm a new person. It doesn't matter. I want to stand out visually. I mentioned at the start of the call, but our Hemlock design is rolling out for advanced marketers. Go check that out if you're in the advanced marketer plan. If you're not, upgrade to the advanced marketer plan to get access to our new Hemlock design, or go to our blog and check out the blog post on the release of that. But also, I mentioned earlier in this call with Joe McCall that we have our concierge services. If you're interested in, number one, if you're an investor closing deals, multiple deals per month right now, and you want to stand out visually, you want the high converting framework that Carrot has, you don't want to have to worry about your hosting and messing with web people and hoping that someone creates a website that converts well and hoping that in 12 months and 18 months, your website is updated to look great on mobile. We take care of all that stuff. Okay, but if you're wanting the visual differentiation, come aboard our concierge program. Just reach out to support. Go to support@oncarrot.com or hit us up on live chat and say, hey, I'm an investor closing deals every month. I'm interested in the concierge program. We just had another one of our clients do their third concierge website with us right now, and they are going out there absolutely crushing it. All right, so oncarrot.com/marketplace for our marketplace items, and hit up support directly to learn more about our concierge program. All right, have an amazing rest of the week, y'all. Talk soon.